Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Oregon's statewide primary election is set for May 19th. The voter registration deadline is April 28th. In the studio today are three of the six candidates running in the Democratic primary for Oregon's Congressional District 2. For those unfamiliar with that district, it's the largest congressional district in Oregon, covering two-thirds of the state. It includes the entirety of Jackson, Josephine, Klamath, and many other counties across our listening region of southern Oregon, extending into eastern and northern regions of the state. The incumbent is Republican Cliff Bentz, a rancher and attorney who has held the seat since 2021. My guests today hope to win the Democratic primary and the right to compete in the fall to become the next congressional representative for District 2. We've invited all six of the candidates to participate in our forum. And given the constraints of our studio, we have three today and are working out scheduling details with the other three. Republican candidates have also been invited to participate. Joining me in the studio now are Rebecca Mueller, Peter Quince, and Don Rasmussen. Rebecca Mueller says her campaign is focusing on issues of health care, fair wages, environmental stewardship, as well as thriving farming and small town economies. She stands for values of human dignity, mutual respect, and the belief that hyperpartisan professional politicians are not serving the interests of a balanced democracy. Welcome to the Exchange, Rebecca.
Thank you so much for having me.
Peter Quince calls himself a total nerd and policy wonk. His first job was working for a member of Congress. He's a former small business owner who helped create an online education company where he wrote numerous cases on federal and state laws and regulations that govern taxes, mortgage lending and banking, commerce, and insurance. Welcome to the Exchange, Peter.
Thanks.
Don Rasmussen describes herself as a working Oregonian, not a career politician. She's a communicator and small business owner. Her campaign is rooted in the idea that leadership should feel human again, practical, present, and connected to everyday life. She champions honest ideas focused on real people rather than political theater. Welcome to the Exchange, Don.
Thanks, Mike.
So let's begin with a simple question. What inspired each of you to run in this race? We'll start with you, Rebecca.
So as a young adult, I was immediately involved in, you know, knowing about politics. I grew up in Iowa where politics is very much on everyone's mind, at least every 4 years and often in between. And one of the things that I noticed as a young adult was that the speeches term after term, election after election were the same. At the same time as I became a young professional, I'm a pediatrician. I've worked in rural healthcare for 15 years. And at the same time that the speeches were the same, the problems were feeling more and more overwhelming, especially for my rural families. Now, one thing people might not know is that rural communities have larger percentages of folks in poverty. That means more people on Medicaid. And so a lot of my families were really struggling to make ends meet. And at the same time, there was a system around them, sometimes in the community, sometimes in healthcare, but definitely at the government level, you would hear speeches that would bring shame on these folks. And I knew from within that clinic room that these were folks that had worked incredibly hard, were working incredibly hard, and were feeling that shame. At the same time, our government hasn't been working for them. And that was really what inspired me to think about running in politics. Also in Oregon, where I've been for the past 10 years, I've worked in communities where their kind of baseline beliefs were very different from mine. It was the first time working in a population like that, but it gave me a great opportunity to see how do we focus on common ground? How do we collaborate? How do we remove the judgments and the biases before we enter the room and actually build that mutual trust? And in our politics, I really see that breaking down. And if nothing else, I want to change the conversation of how we talk about our neighbors, even if they're in a different party. And that's why I'm running.
Oh, I love that. Later on, we'll be talking about that common ground. Peter, same question. What inspired you?
I'll tell you what inspired me. It's Tikkun Olam. It's my North Star and what guides me. Tikkun Olam is a Hebrew term. It's often translated as heal the world. What that means to me is that each of us can heal our little piece of the world, to make better what's within our reach. And if all of us do that, it will heal the world. My first job, as you mentioned, was for a member of Congress while my mother was his congressional aide. That job gave me an appreciation for constituent service, the painstaking work of advocating for all the people in the district, regardless of how they voted. My first political campaign was actually LBJ. I was just a little kid handing out flyers in a mostly Republican area. And the difference between then and now is we all cared for and about each other. There were no hard partisan lines. It was a marketplace of ideas and let the best idea win. You know, I found the same spirit when I joined the Obama campaign in 2007. I actually joined his campaign before he did as part of the draft Obama movement. And my precinct was right here on the SLU campus. So I met with and worked alongside a lot of students. But I also canvassed widely in Jackson and Josephine County. And I was impressed by how thoughtful and engaged almost every voter I talked to was. It really restored my faith in the American voter, or strengthened it. And it was the experience of working for a congressman when I was young and the experience of meeting the people of Southern and Eastern Oregon that inspired me to run, to fight to restore what we all love about democracy, liberty, and caring for our neighbor. Everything I've done in my life, including writing classes, not cases, by the way, on professional education, has led me to this moment, to lending my hand to make what's within my reach better, to restore the proper role of Congress in levying taxes and deciding when to go to war, to rid government of corruption and self-dealing, and to bring projects to the second district that can transform the region. I am inspired by the people of Southern Oregon and by my fellow candidates, and I'm eager to join my hands with yours to work towards Tikkun Olam and heal the world.
Okay, Tikkun Olam.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you've been involved in politics and paying attention for a while, since LBJ.
Well, it's a birthright, I guess. My mother was, as I said, worked for a congressman. I actually was in Washington, D.C. for the March on Washington, 1963, when Dr. King gave his I Have a Dream speech.
Okay, so we have some history in the room.
Pardon me?
We have history in the room.
Yeah, I guess. Thanks.
So, Dawn, same question. What inspired you to run?
I would say it harkens back to when I was at Pacific University, and during that time, there was a club called Politics and Law Forum. We brought a lot of big names onto our college campus that debated people like Patricia Schroeder, who's no longer with us, and Jane Kirkpatrick, who's also no longer with us. It was fascinating to me, and I was totally fired up about that. Then that transitioned into volunteering for Les Alcoin's campaign. He was a graduate of Pacific University. So my whole life, I've been interested and engaged in politics for volunteering on campaigns or volunteering for candidates. And what really led me to this moment right now is a number of factors. Well, first of all, I think anybody who has been keeping up with the news and really can see what's going on, there's a sense of depression. And we're sitting here doom scrolling, feeling depressed, like, oh my gosh, a new day, a new disaster. And I was getting frustrated. What was I going to do about that? Well, I've done rage donating. I've done the protests. I've done the letter writing, the phone calls, all the things. And I just felt like that wasn't enough. So I actually had been on the school board. That's my one elected position with the North Wasco County School District. And one of the teachers there, I stayed in touch after I left the board, and he kept saying, run, run, run. And so it was like this steady drum beat. And I was thinking, okay, maybe I should think about that. Well, finally, I speak a lot professionally. I'm a small business owner that helps people with their careers and resumes and finding their career worth. And it was kind of funny because one of the people I know, he is a speaker on advocacy, and he actually volunteered on John McCain's campaign as advisor. He's now a Democrat. I called him up. I said, Roger, I'm thinking about running. And he says, you'd be perfect at it. And that's kind of what pushed me off the ledge. But most importantly, I see this as a service moment. I've been a community volunteer for many, many years. I've been on neighborhood association boards. I've been on the farmers market board. It's all about serving the community. And I realized that this is that moment where I can transfer that angst, that fear, and turn it into positive energy. And let me tell you, this has been reaping rewards. I mean, so many people are excited and they're very hopeful for this district now. And that's what fires me up every single day.
That sounds incredible. Now, I was talking with a friend of mine just yesterday, and she reminded me that elected officials are public servants. Emphasis on both public and servant. My guests are three of the six candidates in the Democratic primary for Oregon's Congressional District 2, Rebecca Mueller, Peter Quince, and Don Rasmussen. Ronald Reagan was elected to the presidency in 1980 and was sworn into office in 1981. Oregon's Congressional District 2 was Republican then, as it remains today. Each of you thinks you can represent this district best. So if you were to win the Democratic primary, what would you say to Republican voters in this district that could potentially persuade them to elect you over the incumbent? Rebecca?
So I think one thing that has been different for me so far on the campaign trail is that I have not been shy about issuing the opinion that Democrats have not done well with rural areas, not just at the poll box, but in terms of our ability to meet them where they are, in terms of sitting down at the table, in terms of understanding that we don't have a red future and a blue future. We have an interdependent future, that the agriculture, public lands, all of those things are shared resources, or in the terms of agriculture, they're necessary for our future. So we have to have a plan that facilitates working together. And I am quick to say that Democrats have failed on the job of partnering with these communities. And I also have a background. I grew up Christian conservative. I'm still a Christian, but left off the conservative part. And that was a process over a period of years. And so as I've gone through that process, one thing that really gave me a lot of freedom, which I think is pertinent right now when so many on the right are using this term of toxic empathy. There was a point in time when I was struggling through, can I vote for a Democratic president, because I was told that charity work belonged in the church and not in the government. And I had this realization that if we can legislate morality, we can legislate charity. And a newer way of putting that is that I gained the freedom to be compassionate without apology. And I don't think we need to limit our ability to be compassionate with each other. And that has really guided me to stay involved in the Democratic Party. And I think it's a value that can transcend party lines.
Okay. So interdependence is what I heard there.
Yes, absolutely.
So Peter.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I would say that even though I've been involved with politics since I was young, but I'm not a politician. What I like to say is a citizen legislator, which is what I think was how our founders intended people to serve. And Washington, Jefferson, Adams, they went into government, and they went back home to their farms and businesses. And I'm interested. It's interesting to see that both of the candidates here today with me and two of the other three are also not professional politicians. I think we're in a moment that calls for that calls for a citizen legislator, someone who lives within the society, knows what it feels like to live there, and is not so wrapped up with keeping their job that they never get around to doing their job. Mm-hmm. Also, I mentioned earlier about the idea of bringing projects into the district. The average congressional district gets between $36 and $54 million a year in federal projects. That's if you average it out to 435 districts, but you should really average it to 434 because we're not getting any. And there's a lot that we can do here. We can have green energy projects that can transform the state. We can have forest management, water reclamation and irrigation modernization projects, housing and mental health and public safety projects, and rare earth extraction projects that does it safely and keeps the profits right here in the district.
Okay, we're going to have to...
That's fine. Anyway, I just wanted to...
Quick break.
I just wanted to end with saying we can't count on our current representative to do any of that.
Okay, so we're going to come back to this question when we come back, it's you, Don. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guests in the studio are Rebecca Mueller, Peter Quince, and Don Rasmussen. They are three of the six candidates in the Democratic Party primary for Oregon's Congressional District 2. And before the break, we were asking the candidates, what would you say to the Republican voters in this district to persuade them to elect you? And we heard from Rebecca, we heard from Peter, but Don, we didn't hear from you.
I'm happy to talk about that. So, you know, there are a lot of Republicans right now that are feeling pretty disenfranchised. And there are some that are dedicated to following this administration. There are some holdouts. But there's even more, I believe, and I'm convinced that they are trying to find a place to land. And they don't feel convinced that the current party, the Republican Party, is their home. And they're trying to struggle with how do I reconcile that with, you know, their differences with Democrats. And so where I'm coming in and connecting with those Republican voters is to say, hey, you know, we're all in this together. It has a lot to do with unity. But what I'm doing that's different is that I'm actually going to those places that are, you know, scary for me because I'm the only one that's blue and everybody else is red. And it's not about me telling my story as much as it is about listening to what their stories are. People simply want to be listened to, and they also want to be represented. And we're not getting that with the current incumbent, Cliff Bentz. My job is to listen and also get informed. And when people feel like they're being listened to, they start to feel that connection. And I am approaching it from a non-threatening stance. Like, this is not going to be 100% one way or the other. We have to find that balance. And, you know, honestly, most people are more or less in the middle. And so it's about finding those common ground areas. Last night, I was in Roseburg at an event, and I was speaking to a person who identified themselves as a Republican voter. And we all had common ground, and just by asking questions and not using politically charged terms, they saw that I was actually interested in what their viewpoints are, and I am going to be working for the greater good. And when you can communicate that in a way, that is going to get people on your side because they know you're authentic, you're real, and you're showing up and you're stepping up.
Okay, so what I'm hearing you say is that people want to be heard and they want to be valued.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And rural, I would just want to say that rural votes count as much as, you know, city votes too.
Okay. And I heard before that we are citizen servants.
Citizen legislators, yeah. And, or servants is a good word for it as well.
And
Public servants, yeah.
I also heard that we are interdependent mm-hmm. rather than independent of one another.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so I think I'm getting a sense of your campaigns. Now, each of you must present a credible argument in the primary that persuades Democratic voters to support you over the other candidates. So now I'm going to ask, what distinguishes you from the rest of the field? And this is a big field. I mean, there's six, right? So whoever wants to go first is welcome.
I'll jump in.
So okay, go ahead,
this
Don.
Is Don, and really, I would say what set me apart is I'm walking the walk and I'm talking the talk. I've put 7,000 miles on my car. I'm going to the far-flung areas. And that to me is just as important, like I just said earlier, as the populated areas. Showing up and being present and going to all different groups and having conversations with people I don't necessarily agree with, but sparking those conversations. So when I can say I've spoken to all of key electeds, key community groups. I've talked to key nonprofits and just having lots of candidate events and canvassing and phone calls and postcards. It's pretty much a saturation approach. But for me, every town in this state has its own nuance. And I used to work in tourism, so I've actually been to all these towns before. So it's not like I've never been there before and I'm just kind of walking up for the first time. These are areas I know very well, and now I'm getting to know the people, and I'm carrying those messages in my heart to know that this is the best way to represent people. So it's authentic representation and authentic leadership and authentic listening to people because I care.
Okay, so what I'm hearing you say, what distinguishes you is you've actually had a head start getting out there and listening to people.
Correct.
Okay.
So this is Rebecca, and I would echo that, but say in my career in rural healthcare, Similarly, have been doing the work of representing rural interests and, very importantly, to Don's point, listening to the stories. One of the things that's really unique about being a physician is you get an inside scoop to what it looks like to not be able to pay your bills, to not have reliable housing, to have mold growing in your house, to have landlords accusing you of doing things and breaking the bank, to having domestic violence or, you know, other challenges to the family system and not knowing where to go, to seeing up front different sides of abortion policy, whether you're treating the teenager that's in your clinic or you're treating the kiddo that was born at 22 weeks in the neonatology unit and is now a thriving little boy. So I think one of the things that I've really tried to communicate is that for 15 years, I've had the inside scoop on the nuance that policy creates. And for 4 years, have worked within hospital leadership. And one of the things that was the most frustrating was the lack of voice that rural communities, rural providers, rural professionals have in advocating at the state level. And I know that's something that people don't necessarily realize, how much the policies limit what we do. And that is something that I want to bring that experience to this role.
Okay, so what I'm hearing you say that distinguishes you is that you understand how policy affects families at the most nuanced, deepest issues of health, of decision makings by parents with their kids, and you know, as a physician, you're dealing with all of those nuanced issues, and you think that distinguishes you.
Yes.
Okay, Peter.
Well, as you said, and when you first introduced me, I'm a nerd, a policy wonk. I did my graduate study at Columbia University in economics and international relations. And then I wrote classes for professional education, including, for example, on the Affordable Care Act, where I actually had to read the legislation and analyze it and present it for professionals. And so if you go to my website, which is www.pqnow.net, you'll find specific proposals in a host of areas, including a proposal how to address immigration, how to address military spending and war, how to address resource management, and so on. As I said, they're all grounded in very specific proposals, and I know I have in mind the committees I want to get to work on, and just really roll up my sleeves and get the job done when I get there to serve the district.
Okay, so you have policy-making background. You have an understanding of how the machinery works.
I don't know if anybody has an understanding of how the machinery works.
Fair enough.
But I do know how it doesn't work, and certainly can use a lot of help.
Gotcha. My guests are three of the six candidates in the Democratic primary for Oregon's Congressional District 2, Rebecca Mueller, Peter Quince, and Don Rasmussen. So as we get to our final segment here, I want to ask this question. Civic dialogue in our state and our country is challenging. Polarization is present not only at the polls, but in our communities, our classrooms, and our churches and faith communities. If adults have such a difficult time having productive civic dialogue about meaningful issues of politics, religion, race, what hope do we have for each new crop of teenagers who join the ranks of voters every election cycle? Mm-hmm. Whoever wants to go first.
I can, if you don't mind. I'm sorry to question the premise of your question, but I feel like the media does misrepresent the American voter. Mm. They focus on extremes, people who are the most vocal. But if you go door to door, as I did, for example, for the Obama campaign and frankly, campaign after campaign since the 1960s, you'll find that voters are actually very open, very open-minded, very curious. They come to their opinions with a lot of backing, a lot of sincere thought. Meet the people. don't listen to the media, even though we're here on the radio. No, seriously, because the media is just wrong about the American people. And I know for a fact they're wrong about the congressional district, too.
Okay, so you don't think we're actually as polarized as it appears through the media lens?
I don't know if that's the case. What I'm saying is I think people are more open to hearing ideas. They come to their decisions with a lot more thought and grounding and sincerity. So I you know what? They're not just lining up.
I both agree and disagree. This is Rebecca. I do think that there's actually a public face to politics right now that's really amping up the hyper-polarity here, the hyper-partisan stance. And it includes everyone that you see on TV, a lot of people that are currently holding public office. When you literally hear J.D. Vance say that Democrats hate our country, and you hear other leaders say that Democrats are evil, that we don't care at all about this country, that sets up a hyper-partisan polarization. And unfortunately, it encouraged our younger generations. And I have been canvassing in past elections, but I've also done hours and hours of canvassing for this election. And I can say that people are tired of hyper-partisan politics, that it is leading to burnout and overwhelm with our political system. And the last thing I want to say about that is it is that is at the crux. So I do have policy ideas, but I don't think we're not getting things done in Washington because we're lacking policy ideas. I think it's because we're lacking the ability to collaborate, which is why I think my experience of collaboration and meeting people where they are and lifting up trust before we just expect people to bend to our will and ideas are experience things that matter even more foundationally than just the policy arguments, because you can have the best idea in the world, but if you can't talk to people that disagree with you, we're not going to get anywhere. And that's what our younger generations need to see.
Well, my take on this is, I have my own business that's a resume writing business. And I've talked to, over 5,000 people over the last 18 years. And when I'm in a space where people are sharing their intimate career journeys, and one of the questions in my intake form is, what would you like to change in the world? And I will tell you that 99% of everybody who answers that question says that they want to work hard and they want to provide for their family and make a better life for themselves. That's what unites us. And I think remembering that we have a lot more in common than what we have against each other is the driving factor. There's actually a group that I belong to now called BraverAngels.org, and they are bringing people together. I belong to the Columbia Gorge Alliance since I live in the Dalles. And this is an opportunity for people to come together and change the vernacular so we're not using polarizing terms. And I felt like I've met my people because it's putting us in uncomfortable situations that challenges our belief systems and how we talk about things. So the more time we can find common ground, that's great. And then, you know, I found in talking to lots of people that most people are kind of right in the middle. And finding that common ground and removing some of those charged, polarized terms helps us overcome the bias and that polarization and get right down to it. I think that is the heart of it. And most people are very tired of nothing ever happening because of that bickering. Mm-hmm. And when we can remove some of those points that polarize and separate us and actually realize we're talking about the same things, just different terms, that's when we can come together. And that's what I'm driving towards.
Okay, so you three have really been magnificent. But guess what?
Uh-oh.
We only have 90 seconds. That means each of you have about 20 seconds to give me one closing thought and how people can connect with you.
This is Dawn. I am here. I believe that service is part of this district. We cannot have someone who has stepped out, checked out. I'm here. I'm present, accounted for. I'm brave. I'm going to step forward, and I'm going to represent the people, and I'm fearless, and I've got fire in my blood and fire in my veins. I'm ready to go, and I'm here to help this district.
Hey, Peter.
I'd like to remind people that our district is 45% non-aligned independent voters. If you want to vote in the Democratic primary, I urge you to register as a Democrat, even if you're a registered Republican. You can re-register and vote in the primary. Don't forget to do so. Thanks.
Okay. Rebecca.
Well, I know we're out of time, but thank you so much for having us. And yes, I just want to encourage people to broaden their minds, think differently, and I really want to encourage Democrats to hang your American flags and renew the sense that Democrats are patriots, too.
Okay, well, that's all the time we have. Thank you all. My guests were three of the six candidates in the Democratic primary for Oregon's Congressional District 2, Rebecca Mueller, Peter Quince, and Don Rasmussen.